This is Sci-Fi for Me.
Science fiction fans have recently been lamenting the lack of any space-borne programming. There's no Star Trek, there's no Stargate, there's no Babylon 5. And one man and his team are looking to change that. Mark Scott Zickrey joins me now, and we're talking about Space Command. And this is a new project that you've got going. It's a series of films. Who's involved, and what's it about?
Well, it's basically sort of a dream team. As you know, I've worked on so many of those shows, you know, DS9 and Next Gen and Babylon 5 and Sliders and on and on and on and on, hundreds of hours of produced TV. So I sort of took a dry run at this a couple of years ago when I did an episode of Star Trek New Voyages called World Enough in Time, starring George Takei. And it was a Star Trek episode that we did without studio, any studio or network. We did it online on our own with the Star Trek fans and the professionals in the industry that I know. And it took 400 people to make it. There were 700 effect shots, but it was seen by millions of people around the world, and it got nominated for the Hugo and the Nebula. And I co-wrote it and directed it and executive produced it. So that gave me the idea that we really didn't need a studio or network to make something that would go toe-to-toe with the networks. And so when I learned about Kickstarter and that you could raise financing on Kickstarter, I just brought aboard a whole bunch of people. So Neil Johnson is a friend of mine who's directed 9 science fiction films in a row, all profitable. Armin Shimerman, I worked with on Deep Space Nine. He played Quark, and he was the principal on Buffy. And Ethan Phillips comes off Star Trek Voyager. And Doug Jones comes off Pan's Labyrinth and Hellboy. And Amber Benson wants to have a role. She's from Buffy. And I just brought aboard my friend Ian McCaig, who designed Darth Maul and Queen Amidala. And more recently, he was working as a designer on The Avengers and John Carter. So he's a huge, huge A-list guy. And Rachel Luttrell from Stargate Atlantis, where we're going to be working with her. And it's just a whole bunch of people who I just drew about me like a warm quilt. And so right now we started the Kickstarter campaign. It's spacecommandmovie.com is how one gets the Kickstarter campaign, and it's called Space Command. And what we did was we launched our campaign a little over 2 weeks ago. We planned on raising $75,000 in 2 months, and we raised it in just over 3 days. And now we're up to $142,000, and it looks like we'll crack $500,000, maybe $1 million. We've got 2 months total to do it. And so it's just the fans and us, and we're already building. We've got a spaceship set built. We're designing spacesuits. Doug Drexler is also a key member of our team. Doug was one of the main special effects guys on Battlestar Galactica. He just did Blood and Chrome. He comes off all the Trek series, and he's won 2 Emmys and an Oscar. So I just introduced him to Ian McCaig yesterday. I was at Universal with them having lunch, and they just got along like a house of fire. So Ian's already designing characters and creatures, and we're going to do some tests of animations and so forth. So we're actually in pre-production, even though our Kickstarter campaign isn't done. We're going to be making a minimum of 4 films, probably more.
Now, are you planning for these to be theatrical releases? Are they going straight to DVD? What's the distribution plan?
The initial model is I'm running it exactly like I would run a TV show on any of the shows I've been on staff on, but the format is a series of 2-hour essentially episodes, and so it's a series of films. We're planning sort of on the DVD, Blu-ray, downloadable, you know, video on demand model. Obviously, if someone wants to release this theatrically, we won't say no, you know, but the main point about all of this is just not waiting to be picked. The main part of all of this is there's a kind of film that we all want to see, and the networks and studios don't necessarily have an affinity for this kind of material. I mean, maybe once every few years you're going to see a Star Trek movie from JJ, but and maybe they'll pick up 1 or 2 more space-going shows, but they're not, you know. I remember when I was working on a number of shows at the Sci-Fi Channel, the edict at the time was no rubber heads. And what that meant was no aliens, no shows set in space, no spaceships. And Galactica, of course, broke that mold because Universal owned that property and Ron Moore had an angle of attack that was terrific. But it was also a very dark show. And what I want to create is something a lot more hopeful than what Ron was doing. Although many of my friends, of course, worked on that show, and including Doug Drexler. And I love that show, too.
So you're actually wanting to do something that's a little bit more optimistic when you're talking about the future, because all of these other shows that are out there now and the ones that are coming up in the fall, they're the one thing they have in common is that they all assume some sort of disaster of epic proportions that we have to recover from.
Yeah, and that's not what we're doing.
Dystopian post-apocalyptic universe that right now science fiction seems to be really mired in, and we can't get out of that for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because the networks see a particular show that does well and then they want to copy it over and over and over again. Well, in which case you get a bunch of copycats, for, you know, lost copycats, or
right,
you know, something like that. Are you seeing any hints, any indications that we're going to get away from that anytime soon, or are you trying to kind of lead the charge, as it were, with kind of break the mold?
Yeah, I think if one wants to see a certain kind of thing, you sort of have to create it. You have to make it happen. I mean, a lot of people wanted me to just walk this into the networks, and I certainly could have. And a number of my friends who are very, you know, A-list kind of guys wanted to partner with me, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to go this way because, you know, I mean, to answer your question about dystopian futures, I mean, I've certainly worked on shows that had that attitude, and some of those stories can be very, very fun. But what I grew up with, when I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I was reading Ray Bradbury and Heinlein and Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke, and Ray became a very dear friend. It's a big loss to have lost him the last day, you know, the day before yesterday. But Ray and I would often talk about this, and I was very aware of, you know, if you read a book like The Martian Chronicles, I mean, my God, in The Martian Chronicles, we devastate the Martians, we have a nuclear war on Earth, and yet it's still a hopeful vision, because at the end, humanity is going to continue outward into space. We become the Martians. It's a positive message, even though it has a lot of darkness in it. And I think that's the importance, because I think a lot of dystopic science fiction, their basic attitude is, well, we're screwed no matter what we do, and I don't think that's a hopeful message. I don't think it's a helpful message, quite frankly, you know. So yeah, I'm creating something new.
Well, and I think too that, you know, they say that entertainment in Hollywood is a reflection of our times, and certainly we are not in circumstances that a lot of people would characterize as hopeful. But I would say that we're seeing something a little unusual, in that in times past, you know, the Depression of the 30s, the Vietnam War of the 70s, when things got really dark, science fiction tend to go the other way and say, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and there is a way out, and we just have to figure out the best way to get there. And I don't see that happening this time.
I agree absolutely. And basically what I'm doing is, when I grew up reading science fiction and watching shows like Star Trek, the original version, you know, the notion was, they were actually, a lot of these guys were basically, they didn't openly say it, but they were all writing in essentially a shared universe. You know, Heinlein, Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke, you know, Gene Roddenberry, Ted Sturgeon, Harlan, they were basically saying, okay, we're going to go out into space, we're going to colonize our solar system, we're going to have Mars colony, we're going to go out into the outer planets, then we're going to invent a starship drive, a star drive, and go out into the other systems and encounter alien races, and it's going to be an expanding vision of humanity. And, you know, and so whether you're reading Have Space, It Will Travel, or The Martian Chronicles, or, you know, or any of these books, you know, The Currents of Space or whatever, you know, it's that shared universe, Star Trek as well. And so what I'm doing is, I'm basically saying, okay, we had a hiccup the last several decades where we went off track on that dream, but I'm coming back to it with Space Command. I'm basically going to be picking up where those guys left off. So in a way, I consider myself a bit of a torchbearer, because that vision was an important one, and one that we shouldn't have left off. We talk about dystopic versus utopian, but in reality, the moment you want to create a better future, you just take an action. I mean, the moon landing, I think, is one of the greatest things that humanity ever did, possibly the greatest thing. And yet it was during the Vietnam War. There were riots in the streets. I mean, you know, there was the Chicago Convention with the police rioting was, I think, 1968, and the Democratic Convention. And yet we still managed the moonshot. And the politicians, in their mind, it was just the Cold War. It was just to beat the Russians. But that wasn't the reason we did it for the mass of humanity. That's why I think anyone who's a human being, anyone who's on this planet, can feel ownership and pride in that moon landing, because it was us as a race doing something magnificent. And so if there were people involved who had lesser motives, that certainly was not the motives of Neil Armstrong, certainly not Buzz Aldrin. I mean, it was heroism, it was valor, it was nobility, it was the best that we can do. So I think that regardless of the times, regardless of the headlines, you decide every day you wake up whether you're going to do something good for, you know, other people, or something that just fills them with despair. You know, so that's where my head's at.
So Space Command is set how far in the future? We're talking about looking forward The production design looks very much like the old Buck Rogers, Tom Corbett, Rocky Jones, Space Ranger type stuff. It's a fun looking aesthetic.
Yeah. Well, in terms of our design aesthetic, we're certainly being inspired by the great science fiction artists of the 1950s, Chesley Bonestell and Ed Emshwiller and Al Williamson, and the science fiction illustrations that Frazetta did for the comic books, and Wally Wood, all those guys, because they were great, great designs. But we're not being limited by that. We're looking forward in terms of where we're headed. The story, essentially, the story takes place over about 200 years. It's the outward migration and colonization and exploration of space. So it's basically the moon base, the Mars landing, colonizing the outer worlds and moons like Europa, and then developing the star drive and going out to the stars. And there are bumps along the way and a lot of difficulties, because humanity is humanity after all, and you're going to have wars and you're going to have all that stuff. But we basically follow two families over several generations as this happens, with the Space Command as the point organization. And the first one I'm writing now is actually set far along that timeline, so it's actually much further out in the development of all these things. At that point, we've got the faster than light drives, and we're having an adventure that takes place fairly far down. But meanwhile, we're also starting to outline some stories that are set earlier in that time frame, and even some vignettes, some 22-minute stories that are going to be much closer to our own time frame now. And so we're basically telling a really big story through the viewpoints of these two families, the Kammer family and the Sikander family. And so a lot of our actors are going to play members of those two families.
So besides the series of films, this sounds to be like a multi-track project where you're going to have, I guess, what they're calling not necessarily a multimedia, but you have the web component. Are you going to have any print material, any short stories or novels that tie into this universe, or is it all going to be visual?
It's certainly a possibility. Right now, basically, the initial point is I've done this series Bible. I'm thinking of it like a TV show, even though it's a series of films. I'm writing the first script now. I'm almost done with the first script. I've outlined the second and third. I know what the fourth is going to be. I'm starting to think about other storylines. I'm also starting to lay out some of the vignettes with Doug Drexler, because those are very much taking place in our own solar system. If we do novels, if we do short stories, certainly, I mean, basically, you know, because it's Kickstarter, it's a grassroots campaign. So if someone comes to us and says, hey, I'm a novelist and I'd like to write some Space Command novels, sure. You know, and Ian McKaig, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to Ian today, and, you know, he's brilliant. I mean, he was the lead character designer on the last three Star Wars films, and he designed the aliens in the Avengers, the guys who are riding those flying sled things, and he designed the Hulk in the Avengers, and he was the big designer on John Carter. And he's going off for a week to teach a symposium at Amherst College, and he said, can I roll some of this material out to the students and have them, just as part of our assignments, have them take a crack at designing some of this stuff? And I said, sure, of course. So for me, it's everyone's welcome. If they have something to bring to the table, everyone's welcome. And in fact, we're having a talent search where anyone anywhere in the world can audition for two of our lead characters. And we'll send them the scenes, and they can shoot it on a, you know, a little camera at home and put it up on YouTube, and we'll consider them for the roles. So it's a very different way of doing it from how the network is doing it.
That kind of calls to mind how some of the Star Trek series were at the beginning, where anybody who just walking off the street could submit a script, without having an agent, without having any prior experience. And it sounds to me a little bit like this might work in a similar fashion, where you have a fan submission process. Is there going to be any kind of formal submission process, or is it just going to be take it as it comes and see what happens?
No, I mean, there's a certain structure. So for instance, with the talent search, which we just announced, you know, people can go onto our website, they can download the sides, they can put it up on there, they can put a scene up on YouTube. We'll then gather those scenes, put them on our site, links on our site, and then our backers, the people who've invested in Space Command on Kickstarter, can then vote for those actors, and we'll winnow it down to five for each role, and then we'll determine, you know, who's going to play those roles. And I mean, these are the two of the leads. I mean, this is not some guy who walks on and it says, did someone order a pizza? You know, so this is, you know, this is a big deal. And but in terms of writing right now, you know, we're not taking submissions in terms of the writing, because I'm writing the first one, I'm co-writing the second one, I'm writing the third one, I'm co-writing the fourth. And I brought aboard my friend Michael Reeves, who sold 400 teleplays. He won an Emmy for the animated Batman. He wrote for Next Gen. He and I co-wrote World Enough in Time. So, yeah, and he's writing books with Neil Gaiman now and writing Star Wars novels. So we're not really open for writing submissions at this stage. But on the other hand, you never know. I mean, I'm sure what something that's going to happen as we get rolling is we'll probably start to have fan films and fan fiction and all that stuff. And I welcome all of that, because the more the audience feels a part of this world. I mean, if Kickstarter had existed back when Roddenberry came up with Star Trek, he might well have gone this route. Because ultimately, I mean, it's interesting when you study the history of Star Trek, they were going to cancel it at the second season. You needed to have a big fan campaign to get it renewed. And then they put in a terrible time frame and time slot. And Roddenberry said, if you don't change the time slot, I'm going to walk. And they called his bluff and he left the show. And the reason the third season is kind of shaky on a lot of the stories is because Roddenberry wasn't there. Well, if he was financing through Kickstarter, the fans would put the money. They make a third season of Star Trek. He'd be running it. There wouldn't be these problems. And he'd be releasing it where millions of people would be seeing it. So the new model is an extremely efficient model, and it's an extremely responsive model to the audience's tastes and desires. Because I've always felt that I'm just creating what I want to see, and there's millions of people who are sort of like me. I'm not arrogant at all. But in terms of a hopeful vision, I think people are hungry for that. I think the moment you say to someone, you can be your best self. There's a future, and of course there's global warming. I'm in West Hollywood, California. Probably in a few years it's going to be beachfront property, but that doesn't mean. You're getting a little thing. We can just keep going. The fact that there's problems in our future, global warming, all that stuff, doesn't mean that at the same time we can't go out to Mars. We can't send a manned mission to Mars. We can't go out to the outer planets. We can do that simultaneously, and solving our problems, but also
talking with Mark Scott Zickrey, the writer and producer of Space Command. And, of course, Skype decides to not cooperate with us anymore, so we're going to continue on the phone. The idea that networks have not picked this up, you went to the Kickstarter route rather than doing a network pitch. Do you think that's the trend? Is that going to you mentioned working with Guillermo del Toro. If we could pick up there and do that part again, and then we'll keep going.
Of course. Yeah, you bet. Certainly all of my friends who are working on big features and big TV shows are fascinated by what I'm doing. They've been giving us blurbs and tweeting us about us and, giving every bit of support they possibly can. Damon Lindelof and JJ and Guillermo and Neil Gaiman and all these guys and Brandon Braga. I see him at the gym regularly, and he's always asking about it. So they love this model, and they're interested. Obviously, if they're earning millions of dollars at the studios, they may not jump ship to do something like Space Command. But again, that's not where I'm coming from. I'm doing this because I want to do it. I'm not doing it because, of any other reason. It's totally, like me writing a novel or doing anything else I do. And I'm doing it with the exact same level of commitment as I would if I were working at Paramount or Universal or any of those places. I don't think the studios are going to be threatened by it. I think they're interested by these new models. The studios and the networks are trying to find the ways to make the Internet profitable. So they're looking for models. They're looking to us to sort of be the ones blazing the trail. So everyone I'm talking to is very supportive of what I'm doing, which is very nice. And fortunately, because of the way I live my life, I'm not exclusionary. If someone can do the job, great, come aboard. And the people I hang out with are the same way. I mean, Guillermo del Toro and JJ, they're all really great guys. Damon Lindelof, they're not snobs at all. We're all driven to create. It all comes from having a vision and having something in your heart and in your head that you want to see out in the world, and you want to share with millions of people. And the thing I love about the way we're doing Space Command is simply that I don't have to wait to pitch to a network, to have them like it, to have to develop it, to have to write the pilot, and then wait to see if they greenlight it. And then if they greenlight the pilot, well, then maybe they'll greenlight the show, and then maybe it'll be an eight episode order, and then maybe they'll give us a back nine or whatever. And then you're hanging by your fingernails every step of the way. With this, We get our money, we make it. It's that simple. And we deliver it to the fans, to the people who want to see it. It's a much cleaner, and I don't mean cleaner in a pejorative way, I just mean it's more straightforward. And we write it, we make it, there it is. So it's exactly what I did with World Enough in Time when I did the Star Trek New Voyages episode, except the only difference is that Space Command is our property. You know, we're not beholden to Paramount for Star Trek, and in this case we're creating our own vision.
Now, what is your anticipated timeline for finishing the first film? You said you're already in pre-production, you're building sets, you're creating costumes,
yes.
and I'm assuming creature designs.
Robots and androids and aliens and all that, yeah, absolutely.
That'll be fun.
flying belts, you name it. It's essentially our plan is to start shooting in September. Post-production will be entirely dependent on how much money we raise, because obviously if it's, you know, one or two guys, you know, cranking out, you know, 1,000 shots, you know, 1,000 special effects shots, that's going to take a while. It could be a year and a half in post-production. On the other hand, if we, you know, have a higher budget, we can bring aboard more effects guys, and then it gets done a lot quicker. Our basic goal is being continual production, so we'll finish shooting the first one, go into post-production on that, you know, be in prep already on the second one, start shooting the second one, you know, just, you know, we're building, we're not tearing down the sets, we're building the sets, the costumes, all that stuff, and we're just going to be ongoingly making this. So that's the plan, and that's the vision, because it's a big epic story. It's not, it's a big canvas.
And you're shooting this in Los Angeles, not Vancouver.
Yes, exactly, yes. And we have a warehouse in the valley, and that's where we're building the spaceship set. And as we get more money from Kickstarter, and as we, you know, continue to grow our operation, we'll expand. We'll have more and more warehouse space. It'll be exactly like when I wrote for Babylon 5. You know, that was a warehouse out in the northern part of the valley, and all the standing sets were there, and they never left the building. They just kind of, all their exteriors were CG exteriors. Now, we probably will go on location. We may go out to the desert or some other setting for some of our you know, planetary environments, but there'll also be a lot of CG, and you know, it'll fold together really nicely. It's gonna look great.
Well, you know, if you do go out on location, you have to go out to the Vasquez Rocks.
Yes,
right.
I love the Vasquez Rocks. Absolutely, you bet.
Yeah. Okay. So the website again is what? How do people find you?
It's spacecommandmovie.com. Spacecommandmovie.com takes you directly to the Kickstarter page, and from there you can click through to our website, and that's how we do it.
All right. Well, good luck with everything. Hopefully, we'll see that number jump very, very quickly. As of this recording, the 37 days to go for your initial goal. After that, are you doing a second goal on Kickstarter, or are you just going to work with what you get?
Hey, we'll see how it goes. You know, this is new territory for all of us, and I'm very grateful to everyone who's pledged. I mean, anyone who's put in even a dollar, I'm incredibly grateful. And so, you know, if this works, we'll keep it as a viable option to raise money. But, you know, some of our backers have even wanted to invest. And we said, you know, well, let's explore that down the line. Let's get through this 2-month period for the campaign, and then we can look at that as well. I mean, everything that makes this possible, we're very open to doing it that way.
All right. Well, good luck with everything. Mark Scott Zickery, thank you very much for your time. The website, again, is spacecommandmovie.com. And for those of you who are wanting to audition for a lead part, get your acting chops in gear and get your videos ready. And you can download lines to practice and audition for a part in this film. Now, again, this is not going to be a walk-on part. This is for a lead part. And we'll have information for that on our website as well. Mark Scott Zickery, thank you very much for your time. Again, apologies for the technical mishaps today, but we got it all put together.
It was great, Jason. Anytime. It's really fun to talk with you.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com.